In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
What does motion sound like? With Kizikans free shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
I'm Andrew Gold, a fallen BBC journalist interviewing the heretics and rebels brave enough to speak out against mainstream narratives. Here's Coleman Hughes, John Ronson, and the Trigonometry podcast guys bringing controversy to the fore.
How'd you feel if a person of a different race moved in next door?
I spent a while with a politically correct faction of the Ku Klux Klan.
The system punishes people for wrongthink. It's heartbreaking.
Here's My Unorthodox Life Netflix star Julia Hart on getting out of a Hasidic Jewish cult.
Why can't I be okay with being silent and subservient? Everyone else is.
And biologist Richard Dawkins on trans activism.
It's perfectly legitimate to say, I'm a man, but I feel feminine. But to then say, therefore I am a woman, is just a betrayal of language.
Now it's your turn. Rebel against the mainstream and find a home in this sensible alternative space by subscribing to Heretics Podcast.
All right, Adam Borowski, Paranormal Poland, coming down in 3, 2, and 1.
Richard Serrett's Strange Planet. Following the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from the Great White North and his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard.
And welcome to another episode of Strange Planet. Good to be with you. All right, on today's episode, we're going to explore paranormal Poland, and we've reached out to Warsaw, Poland, and Adam Borowski is a translator, writer, author of an upcoming book called Euthanizers. He'll tell us a little bit about that, and we're going to get into some urban legends in Poland, haunted locations, UFOs, missing people, and more. Adam Borowski, welcome. How are you?
Hey, Richard. I'm great. Thanks for having me again.
My pleasure. So when we talk about haunted locations, can we start with your place? Is that something we can talk about? Or?
Oh, yeah, sure. We can. There is a lot of, I'm in Warsaw, right? Warsaw suburbs, to be exact. Yeah, there are plenty of places here that are of interest. For example, there is a town just next to me, basically. There was a very interesting UFO sighting in the 90s that involved a possible reptilian. Now the witnesses, maybe they aren't very credible when you think about it, because they were kids back then, with mental issues, but still they were adults as well. And it's a very interesting case. And there is even a UFO that apparently turned into a car. So it's a fascinating case. And not many people know about it, even here locally.
All right. Tell me a little bit more.
Yeah, sure. Sure. The kids said basically that there was some kind of activity, and they said that they would like to communicate with this force because there was some UFO flying around, some kind of activity. And apparently on the glass, there were like reptilian paws, reptilian claws, you know, left and imprints. So a really interesting case. And there was also a visitation. The kids reported the visitation by some kind of entities, which probably could be grays, could have been grays, in suits, right, in the scaphanders. So a really interesting case. And then there was this UFO that turned into a car. So that's fascinating in itself. Now, whether it really happened or not, I can't really tell you whether it was the case here, but it's definitely everything points to the fact that it did. And it's a fascinating case. It's about 25 years old or so.
All right. So let's talk about keeping it with Warsaw, your town. There's a book called Warsaw's Urban Legends, and it was written by Marek Dabrowski. And there's a story in there. This is one of the top legends, I understand, in all of Poland. It's called the Black Volga. What is a Black Volga?
Yeah, the Black Volga is a car, as the name suggests, right? Because the car, and this car, it was driven there are various expressions here, various thoughts. Who was the driver, right? Some say it was a Satan. Some say it was just some kind of organ trafficking, perhaps. So various drivers, various mysterious people behind it, and basically this Volga, this car, whoever was driving it was kidnapping children to take them to Germany for organ harvesting or to some other places in the West. That was the general idea. So, and of course, it connects with vampires and, you know, in a way with missing 411. So it's a fascinating case because of that. But I guess it could reflect the, you know, the times, right, of the communism, which, of course, was paranoia of, you know, people disappearing and the general paranoia of the times.
Right. Well, because the Black Volga was a Russian-made car, I guess. It was very popular with the communist elite. They would drive kind of like a Cadillac.
Right, exactly. And of course, it's no secret that the organ trafficking, you know, human trafficking, the urban legends associated with that, linked to that, were quite popular at that time, especially, you know, if rich Westerners coming to Poland and needing a new kidney or some sort of organ. And of course, this Black Volga was basically responsible for providing them with that, right? So this Black Volga was like a symbol of some kind of mysterious force that was there to kidnap people so they could be used for organ harvesting and et cetera.
Right. And when was this taking place in Warsaw?
Well, that was before the fall of communism. So basically until 1989, then it's kind of funny because the cars changed, the more modern cars, right? But the Black Volga was basically around until 1989 when the real changes started happening, of course, in Poland and indeed the region here in Europe and the Soviet bloc and the surrounding countries. So, but this legend is still around, just not the Volga anymore. You're probably going to get a Mercedes, you know, more modern cars now, because, of course, we are in a different era. But the idea is the same, that there is this force, this mysterious driver who abducts people, mainly children, for organ harvesting and sometimes even human trafficking, right? So this is the idea behind it.
Staying with Warsaw, there's a legend about a flickering lamppost. And again, this dates back to the communist era. And so tell me about this flickering lamppost in the city.
Yeah, apparently this flickering lamppost, this wasn't random, right? This flickering, there was some sort of code, possibly Morse code. It was used by agents. Some say Soviet spies. Some say maybe even American spies. It's a really interesting case. But of course, you know, with flickering lights, you can't really tell whether there is something to it or not, because lights can flicker for all sorts of reasons, especially in a communist country where, you know, things aren't exactly operating as they should. So I wouldn't really put that much stock into this particular legend, but it's an interesting one nonetheless.
It sort of reminds me of these shortwave radio signals that some people have heard, where they're just repeating numbers and
number stations, right?
Right, and the theory is that again, it's related to espionage, and these are spies somewhere, you know, behind enemy lines, if you will, and they're sending out encrypted messages with just a string of numbers.
Yeah, it's possible, Richard. That's a great idea right there. And I think it's highly likely. But again, I've been hearing about these radio stations for a long time. And I can't tell you what they are because I'm not an expert, you know, in terms of what they could be. But there is certainly a possibility that some kind of a mysterious force is using these, or perhaps it's just teasing us, right? Just trying to test our reactions to it. But it's definitely a pattern. I did listen to it a few times, and there is a pattern behind it. So it's clearly some kind of message. What kind of message? Who's the, you know, who's behind it? We don't know, but there is definitely some kind of message. Perhaps it's some kind of low tech way of communicating, you know, to avoid the digital way of communication. Who knows?
So there's this blue skyscraper in Warsaw, in Bankowy Square, I guess.
And, yeah.
It's this huge edifice, and it's got these reflective glass panels. They reflect the blue of the sky, so that's why it's called the blue skyscraper, obviously.
Correct. Yeah.
1991. Yeah. How does this relate to this urban legend of the rabbi's curse?
Right. Well, that's a really interesting story because Warsaw, as some of your listeners may not know, or in Poland before the war, there was a major Jewish presence here before 1939, September 1939. Warsaw's population was one third Jewish. So 1,300,000 people. So that was a lot. But, you know, when you take one third of that. Now, considering this, the synagogue, one of the biggest synagogues in the world, was located in Warsaw at the time. And it was destroyed on May 16th, 1933. 43, sorry, yes, that's correct. And, you know, decades later, this skyscraper was, well, they started building it, but they couldn't really completed. They couldn't finish it because there were always some problems. Something was missing. There was someone killed and so on. And some people speculated that perhaps maybe this rabbi had cursed this plot of land, you know, as a revenge of sorts, that, you know, someone would want to desecrate this area that was sacred. And now they're just building this skyscraper, this abomination. But it stopped after a while, this curse, it seems. The paranormal activity around the area, and indeed in the building, some say even in the building, there were some kind of strange, you know, phenomena, like, for example, floating items and so on. But apparently, now it's pretty calm. It stopped. Some say that because of the plaque that was put in front of the building or on the building commemorating the synagogue, that maybe that was the reason why it stopped. But the fact is, for now, it's been relatively calm. Nothing is going on there.
Well, sticking with World War II in Warsaw for a moment, there is another legend linked to World War II. And it revolves around an apparition of a lady clad in a white dress, supposedly haunting the beautiful neoclassical villa in Warsaw on Morski Oko Street. Tell me about it.
Yeah. As you know, or some of your listeners, again, may not know, Warsaw was destroyed in the Second World War. 85% of the city was razed to the ground by the Nazis. And there was a lot of fighting, and especially young people were very, very active. And there are many legends. For example, Girl Scouts were really active at that time as well. And in this case, there was this young girl. Maybe she was a scout, maybe not. We don't know that. But she hid in this villa, in this beautiful house. And she was staying there for a while. And she saw this handsome young gentleman, and she wanted to get out of the house and see where he was. And that's when she was shot, or there was a stray bullet. The point is, she died. And this apparition, this ghost, Hannah's ghost is now haunting the area. She's not very aggressive, apparently. She's just walking around. And I remember this case pretty well because actually that was one of the cases I have covered for the local television here. So it's a really interesting case. But as far as I know, she has never been recorded in any way. There are just rumors, right, that this is what happened. So this villa, this place is definitely, it's imbued with history. There is no doubt about it. And yeah, it's one of these interesting cases that you have many, many in Warsaw because of the tragic history of the city. I always say that if there is a psychic, because sometimes I listen to psychics who say that, you know, they can sense or see dead people. I cannot imagine, Richard, what they would be seeing here in Warsaw, where you had 200,000 people, civilians, killed in terrible ways, terrible, absolutely terrible ways. So yeah, this is just one of many stories that I could tell you about this case of this girl.
Ghost hunting programs are very popular in North America on television. Are they also popular in Poland?
Yes, they are, but I wouldn't say they are as popular as in the US because obviously Poland is, well, smaller, and Poland is still a Catholic in many ways, right? So I think there's a certain, people have a certain, well, they don't like talking about it that much because some people see it as maybe evil, maybe, you know, demonic. So yes, it's popular, but let's take Halloween as an example, right? Just to give you an idea of what I mean. Of course, people celebrate it, but there are many people in Poland who are going to tell you, well, no, it's not our, we shouldn't celebrate this. We have our own holidays. We have our own celebrations and we should not, just cater or think about this or look at to the West, right? That's basically the message here. So I think it's the same with ghost shows. These shows are kind of different because of tragic Polish history mainly, right? You have so many cases here, as I said, with Warsaw, for example, and you don't really have that in America for obvious reasons. So yes, it's popular, but you need to remember that many people see this as sort of maybe evil, maybe demonic because of religious undertones.
So you had a president in Poland prior to the Second World War, a long-serving president, served from 26 to 39. I won't attempt to pronounce his name.
Moszczycki.
Moszczycki. President Moszczycki. Yeah. Well, tell me about, there's a legend around him that his wife or someone was haunted by his ghost later in life.
Yeah, that's right. He had this beautiful villa on Racławicka Street. Again, it's a difficult word to pronounce, I know. And he is rumored to be walking around this place still, even today, right? Because he basically was there in the second half of the 1930s. And then he left for Switzerland. And for Romania. So there are some rumors that he liked the place so much that he's still there walking around and haunting the place. I don't like the word haunting, though, because haunting seems to be aggressive, but it's basically an apparition that's just walking around and, you know, letting its presence known to curious observers. But again, it's never been recorded. It's just rumors, right? So there are many rumors like this in Warsaw, let alone Poland, because of the tragic history, as I said. And it's just one of many. And by the way, as a historical anecdote here, the Polish, the Warsaw mayor, who was, when the Nazi Germany invaded, his body was never found. Starzyński, again, a very hard to pronounce, I know. His body was never found. Right. So he had this famous speech. I wanted Warsaw to be great. Sadly, Warsaw was razed to the ground. Right.
So keeping with ghosts, there's another ghost legend with Warsaw, but this time with animals involving horses at a Warsaw racetrack. Tell me about it.
Yeah, that's right. There is this racetrack in Warsaw, which is quite popular. And some people say that apparently that injured horses or dead horses can sometimes be seen in the area. Now, I'm not sure if this racetrack was around before the Second World War, But if it was, it's possible that some horses were killed during the war, and maybe the ghost of horses or some kind of remnants, because I guess it's debatable whether horses have some kind of, you know, consciousness, whatever you want to call it, in that sense, you know, soul. But some kind of remnants can be seen there. Yes, I heard it a few times. And well, it's a different story, right? Because animals, spirits, that's something else. And if that was the case, then indeed that would mean animals have souls, or our souls on some level as well.
Adam, we'll take a quick time out. We'll come back and continue to delve into paranormal Poland with writer, translator, author Adam Borowski. Stay with us.
Overwhelmed by investing?
If you're anything like us, the hardest part is getting started. That's why we created the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Our goal is to help simplify money so it can work for you.
We invite guests to demystify investing.
At least try to be setting aside like the minimum 10% into the 401k.
We'll teach you the basics of the market.
Yeah, I think compound interest should be at the start of any discussion about investing. And
we've had investment professionals who teach in a simple way.
A valuation-driven bear market, you know, we haven't really seen yet, and I think everyone's thinking about it, but we haven't really seen yet.
Our Q&A episodes feature questions from listeners just like you.
So what do you think about the situation with ETBI, which is Activision?
I'm Dave Ahern.
And I'm Andrew Sather.
And we hope you join us on the Investing for Beginners podcast.
On the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Have you ever wondered why we call French fries French fries? Or why something is the greatest thing since sliced bread? There are answers to those questions. Everything Everywhere Daily is a podcast for curious people who want to learn more about the world around them. Every day, you'll learn something new about things you never knew you didn't know. Subjects include history, science, geography, mathematics, and culture. If you're a curious person and want to learn more about the world you live in, just subscribe to Everything Everywhere Daily wherever you cast your pod.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Well, what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the host of the Underworld Podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it. And we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
We all enjoy a little mystery. Every other week, one strange thing presents forgotten stories from America's newspaper archives. They all have something in common. A single element that can't quite be explained. Join us on One Strange Thing, and you'll hear about a man who was literally stricken with genius. A 21st century child who remembered piloting a World War II bomber. A mysterious, unidentifiable blob in Texas. And then there was the lizard man stalking through small-town South Carolina. From cryptids and disappearances to modern-day miracles, One Strange Thing brings you stories that are very real and just a little otherworldly. Subscribe now, wherever you listen.
I call it the miracle molecule, carbon 60 or C60, for my good friends at C60evo.com. And I take a tablespoon every morning. It delivers more than 172 times the power of vitamin C. C60 is a known antiviral, antioxidant, antibacterial, anti-inflammatory. It's a remedy that works. C60 Evo users consistently enjoy better sleep and wake up feeling refreshed. This alone is worth the cost of the bottle. I sleep like a baby. I have no aches or pains. Zero. I'm 58 and I don't have a gray hair on my head. Get your miracle in a bottle, C60, from c60evo.com/Richard-Serrett. c60evo.com/Richard-Serrett. Use the coupon code EVRS at checkout and save an additional 10%. This statement has not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. If you have a medical concern, please contact your healthcare provider.
It's time to redefine reality. This is Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
And we are back with translator, writer, author Adam Borowski joining us from Warsaw. We're talking paranormal Poland. How about for you, Adam? Any paranormal activity in your life?
Yeah, there was some interesting cases. There was one particularly interesting case of ghost. Apparently there was a ghost or is a ghost at an abandoned police station. And I had a chance to talk to a detective who didn't really believe that, but his friend apparently had seen this, this ghost. So this was interesting to me because, you know, police officers aren't known for making things up most of the time. So it was very, very different than just some witness or someone like that. I did have an interesting EVP recorded as well about 15 years ago, which was a voice. It was addressing me directly, and there is no way it was someone walking around or just some kind of person. No, it was definitely some kind of unnatural voice. It was a floating voice. It was a woman's voice. It was like someone floating away. And there is no way that she was anywhere near me at that time. So, because I checked it many times, I went over this, I've gone over this scenario many times, and really interesting. And it really gave me a chills, right? Because it was, because she was addressing me directly. And that was really, really fascinating to me. I was really skeptical about, you know, EVPs and all this stuff, but then after that, there's definitely something to it.
Well,
but
in terms, what were the circumstances in under which you recorded this EVP? Where were you, and what happened?
I was here. There's a huge graveyard, a huge cemetery here, Powązki. It's in Warsaw. It's a really fascinating place. There were huge fights happening there, huge battles in the Second World War. Like I said, with the young Polish people fighting Nazis, Nazi Germany, or Nazis in general. And there was a lot of fighting going on there because, of course, they were hiding there. The young Poles were hiding there. It's a huge cemetery. I went there around the time of Halloween, but here in Poland, we have the All Souls Day, you know, more the Slavic tradition. So instead of what's happening in the West, what people do in the West, like, you know, they trick and treat and so on, here it's more, as it's usually the case in Poland, with Poland, it's more solemn, it's more, let's say, you know, this kind of sad, right? You do remember your ancestors, yes, but it's more like in terms of going to the grave and just standing there and talking about this person, you know, that had passed away. So it's kind of different. So I went to the cemetery. You know, I had this small mic because it was even then it was this kind of technology was different, but I had this small mic on me, and I was just let's say had this suggestion or this made this suggestion, this mental suggestion that if there is anything there, let it record itself. Right. And this voice had imprinted itself. Let's put it this way on my recorder. It wasn't even a digital recorder. It was some kind of, you know, very, very old recorder. And it was, a really interesting case, no doubt about it. But again, if I played it to someone, without this context, without being there, it means nothing, right? Because these experiences, you need to be there and experience them yourself, which is why I know it's real because I experienced it. I've recorded this, and there was definitely intelligence behind it. And there is no way it's been said by anyone around me at the time. It's like this voice has inserted itself at a specific moment when it knew when to do it, which is amazing. And that's why I know EVPs are very much a reality. What's behind them, I have no idea. You know, it depends on your belief system, but this is definitely fascinating. But in terms of paranormal, as in, you know, some people talk about being taken to spaceships and so on, I would never make that claim. Even if something like this happened to me, I would never, you know, say it openly, because without evidence, without proof, you know, I'm the kind of person that I don't think it would make any sense, right? I know there are people claiming all sorts of things, but in my opinion, based on my experiences, if someone really had gone through an experience like that, it's highly unlikely that they would have, you know, talked about it. Because from a psychological point of view, from a psychological standpoint, I just don't think it's logical. But again, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, you know, people that talk about, you know, alien abductions and so on, maybe there is indeed, maybe it's what happened to them, right? But when I imagine myself in that scenario, psychological level of shock, I don't think that it's that easy, right? Because it's absolutely, you know what I'm talking about.
Well, traumatized. You're traumatized.
Yeah, exactly.
And change your entire view of reality, and that's too much for some people to be able to process.
Yeah, exactly. And I just don't think that people that talk about it openly, well, some could say, well, yeah, because it's their method of coping. But I'm more inclined to believe that, you know, there are cases of people who just shut down. They didn't want to talk about anything of the sort, of this kind of stuff. I'm more inclined to believe that people have really powerful experiences involving the paranormal or some kind of, you know, paranormal related. I think it's highly unlikely that they would be talking about it openly. It can happen, but it's highly unlikely, in my opinion. So that's why, when you talk about, you know, the paranormal experiences, what kind of paranormal experiences I've had, well, this EVP definitely qualifies. This kind of supposed ghost that this police officer has mentioned.
Well, tell me more about that. You, what were the circumstances at this police station? And
right, can I use some more harsh language, Richard? Because there is something he said that, but I think I can, right?
Sure.
Yeah, he said, well, the first that this detective said, well, I don't believe in this bullshit, but I have this friend and he's been in the service for 30 years. And if he says that's what happened, then it happened and it did. And then it has. And basically what the second person said, the second officer, that he was that he saw some kind of being, some kind of person actually just enter this police station. Just this person walked upstairs, but it was not a physical, let's say, human being, right? It was this second police officer could tell this wasn't a physical human being, like a corporeal human being. So definitely a really interesting case. I wanted to interview this individual, this gentleman. Sadly, there were some complications with cancer, and I've never been able to do that, but it's definitely an interesting case, because I could tell this first person, this detective, he wasn't just some, you know, police officer, like some low level. He was a detective. So they're a different level. Okay. You need to be smart. It's a different level of mind. And he said openly, I don't believe in that, but I can't discount what my friend has experienced. And if he says that's what happened, then that's what happened. End of story, right? So definitely interesting. But I, you know, in terms of some really strange paranormal happenings, like some people claim to have experienced some gone through. I remember this lady talking about having an alien that has proposed to her and some kind of stuff like that. No, I've never experienced something like that. And even if there was something like that in my life, I don't think I would talk about it openly, because first, I would have no proof. So why would I talk about it? And second of all, what would talking about it give me, right? So that's how I see it. But I'm fascinated by what people talk about. Sometimes, you know, you really wonder what you hear. But I think there are so many cases around us that are not necessarily paranormal, and they're still fascinating. For example, Richard, we could talk about one place here, if you don't mind. Just nearby, it's also a very interesting place. If you think that's a good idea,
go ahead.
Yeah, the place is called Zofiówka. It was before the Second World War. It was a hospital for Jews with mental problems. So then the Second World War, first you had the T4 action. Now, T4 was basically euthanasia by Nazi Germany had this program of euthanasia of the so-called undesirables, right? T4. It was called T4. And it was done throughout Germany, of course, and in occupied areas. So that's what they did here. And some of the doctors, they actually killed themselves in protest because they knew what was going to happen to their patients. So they said, no, we don't like this. And they committed suicide in protest. And then you had Lebensborn. Lebensborn was an organization that was responsible for the forced Germanization of Polish kids, or some Polish kids that were deemed to be Aryan, right? Aryan characteristics. So that there was then you had, after T4, you had this Lebensborn program. Now, what's interesting about this place is that there is a very strong paranormal angle there. There was even a video recorded there some years ago. I'm not sure if you remember, it was quite famous with this a person in a Dr. Death mask, like in the Middle Ages, with Morse code. And it was a pretty viral video on YouTube. It was actually recorded there in Zofiówka, in this area. So when you enter this hospital, or it's no longer a hospital, but it's still, the building is still there, there are really strange drawings on the walls. So the atmosphere is just eerie. It's a really strange place. And I have no doubt whatsoever that if someone were to conduct or, you know, record EVPs there, I'm sure you would get a great, great results. No doubt whatsoever, given this place's history, absolutely a crazy history, even for Polish standards. And I'm sure you would get really, really interesting results. And it's a great place in terms of, you know, urban exploration and the paranormal. But in terms of the history, absolutely tragic, and just shows you the level of depravity that humans are capable of.
I want to talk about Wolf Grigorievich Messing. He was actually, he was a Russian, wasn't he?
He was Polish, he was Russian, he was Jewish, you know, because Poland was controlled, you know, the Russian Empire was, you know, Poland was controlled by Russia for a long time. So at that time, it was part of Russian Empire. So he was three nationalities at the same time. So Polish, Jewish, and Russian, or Soviet to be more precise. Yeah, he claimed to have the power to project any kind of image he wanted to you to see. So for example, there is this story that Stalin asked him, okay, you're so great, Messing, okay, here's what I want you to do. You are to enter my villa, and if you can do this, I'll believe you. And apparently,
in other words, sneak past the guards, disguised,
exactly,
projecting another image. He could make people believe he was whoever
Beria
wanted them to.
And the chief of police, that was absolutely a monster. And they saw, the guards swore they saw Beria. He was the chief of police. So, truly an amazing story. Whether Messing really had these powers, well, we don't know, but he was famous, and he basically claimed that he could, you know, like he was the mentalist, the ultimate mentalist. He could make you believe that, let's say, you were holding paper and there was actually, you know, a lot of money. So really, a really interesting individual. And so there are many people like that here in Poland with a kind of history. But what's interesting about these people, as I've mentioned, is they are often Russian and Jewish at the same time, because of history of how it, you know, works here in Poland, given the history of our history here. So it's sometimes complicated to really tell what kind of nationality was actually what this person was, you know, whether this was Polish or Russian or Jewish or all three, or maybe German. You know, there's a lot of confusion at times. Yeah, so that's another story in itself. Well,
Messing became Stalin's personal wizard, I understand.
Yes, and Stalin apparently was afraid of Messing. Apparently, Stalin was afraid of Messing, which was, this was quite a feat, if that's true. And apparently, Hitler hated missing because missing prophesied or predicted that Hitler would be destroyed when he turned east. But of course, you know, you could say that was just a savvy political prediction. So I guess that's possible too. Yeah, and of course, Messing was Jewish, so obviously, you know, I don't need to explain that and tell you that the Nazi ideology, well, that was the problem, right? So obviously, Messing was avoiding Nazi Germany like the plague for obvious reasons. So, yeah, it's for a very interesting story. And there's another story we could talk about, Richard, Stefan Ossowiecki.
This is the gentleman that predicted his own death.
That's right. He predicted his own death in the Warsaw Uprising. He was an engineer, and apparently, you know, he was famous before the war. Sigmund Freud knew about him or was friends with him, apparently, Albert Einstein. So he was well known in you know, before the war. And yes, he was an engineer. So he wasn't just some, you know, person that making things up in the sense that he understood the very basis of how the things work. And this gave him credibility, of course. And he said that his body was never going to be found. And he even specified the date when he was going to get killed, when he was going to be killed. But again, whether that was actually the case, you know, Warsaw Uprising, that was the beginning of the Warsaw Uprising, chaos, Germans burning buildings to the ground. Well, not at that point, but close. So, you know, it's not very difficult to predict, yeah, you're not going to find my body. I mean, that scenario, just imagine the Ukraine now, right? It's not exactly a prediction, but he was definitely famous at the time before the war and during the war. And so, yeah, it's a really interesting person because, you know, Sigmund Freud and Albert Einstein, I don't think that they wouldn't have been fascinated by this individual, by this man, if there wasn't, hadn't been something to his claims, right?
Well, so yeah, as you say, he may have been killed by the Gestapo during the Warsaw Uprising, and that's why, you know, his body was never found.
That's the story, Richard. But again, given the chaos, we don't really know, right? Because there was so much chaos going on that's the story, is that Gestapo got to him. But whether that's actually what happened, we just don't know. You know, it's, as I said, 200,000 civilians dead. So you can imagine the level of chaos we're talking about, the mayhem. But the story is that, that he was killed by the Gestapo, yes.
What about his psychic abilities? What can you tell us about his clairvoyance?
Yeah, he could predict the future. Apparently, he could tell with incredible accuracy, you know, some events from people's lives that, you know, they never shared with anyone, stuff like that. So it was definitely interesting for people. But again, some people claimed that, you know, basically he was a clever psychologist. He could see things, notice things, kind of like Missing. Wolf Missing, the previous gentleman we talked about. So. Yeah, it was, it's hard to really tell whether this was genuine because some would say that it's just a conjuring tricks. Like, you know, he was kind of like a psychic that was a pretend psychic that would, you know, kind of move chairs, you know, or something like that. But, you know, it's definitely someone that has a place in history, right? Let's put it this way. Well, by the way, just one important thing, I guess, that he could have, or he could do, or he claimed to do, he could see objects in sealed containers, and he could travel outside the body. And there was actually one friend that said that he could talk about this conversation this friend was having. But again, this is all rumors, right? Just like this part with his body not being found, because remember the chaos at that time. I would love to believe this is a real, you know, psychic, that he was a real psychic, but again, given how things are and how things were, I'm kind of skeptical, right?
Adam Borowski, translator, writer, and author living in Warsaw, Poland. You've been working on a new book, a piece of fiction, and it's called Euthanizers. And can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, sure, Richard. Thanks for giving me this opportunity. Right. So Euthanizers are basically individuals that, you know, the concept we know from history and from science fiction in general, that want to steal other people's lives, what I call dimensional one percenters. So they see someone who has a better life and they analyze this other, that their double, so their counterpart in this other universe that they want to live in. They analyze everything about this person and then they just cross over and they kill this individual in ways that doesn't leave a trace, and then this, the body of this individual is thrown back to the, or the dimension they came from. But the idea, the overarching idea, because euthanizers are just part of it, is the demiurge. Of course, I'm fascinated by the concept of the soul trap, right? That the light that people talk about, that it's this great light, that it's actually a trap. Again, this concept's been around for thousands of years probably, so I'm fascinated by the demiurge. So actually my novel is told from the point of view of the demiurge, and euthanizers are a part of it. What's interesting to me is that people that are familiar with the novel snippets think it's unique, and that's great for info for me. And I'm talking about total strangers. People have no interest in sugarcoating, which is great for me. And there are some funny parts involving various nations getting punished. I'm deliberately being vague because I think it's an interesting story to read. And this, I like to play around with identity in general, like people changing identities in terms of who they are, in terms of nationalities, in terms of realities. So this is definitely there. And it's, so this overarching theme is, of course, the light, and euthanizers are there. And again, the changes I just talked about. And of course, the idea that we, I know I don't think you believe in reincarnation, Richard, but for argument's sake, that we remember who we were. And then when we incarnate again with the knowledge of who we were, how does that impact us? This other process of socialization, right? Would we go crazy with this kind of new information? What would happen if this was a different reality? So not just a different body, but a different reality, right? So I like to play around with these kinds of things. And it's kind of like a mix of horror, comedy, thriller, you know, everything is there. And I'm really pleased with it now because it's much shorter than my original version, but it's way better. And I really think it has potential. And I'm not just saying it because, you know, I've written it. So, you know, that's, I'm just stroking my own ego. No, I think it really has potential. And I'm really, really happy because, what I've written, basically.
Euthanizers, and by Adam Borofsky. You're looking for a publisher and people can find out more information. And I guess read some snippets from the book at Escaping Hazmat Demons. That's the Facebook page at Escaping Hazmat Demons, right?
Yes, Richard. I guess when I look at some of your guests and they have great websites and so on, I need to think about it too, because this page is kind of old, but it's better than nothing, I guess. And yes, I'll need a nice website. And if someone out there knows the process of publishing well, for example, you know, what's the best way of doing it, self-publishing or some other method, please contact me. That would be great. If you have some insider knowledge that you could share with me, that would be great, whoever you are out there.
And they can contact you via email, adam.borofsky. That's B-O-R-O-W-S-K-I, adam.borofsky, B-O-R-O-W-S-K-I, 1985 at gmail.com. And I'll put the link to the Facebook page and your email address in the episode notes.
Okay, Richard, that's great. Thanks again for this opportunity. It was a nice chat. I hope your listeners will appreciate this different Polish perspective.
Absolutely. Adam, thanks again.
Thanks, Richard. Have a great day or a great evening.
A new Richard Serrett's Strange Planet drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Subscribe at strangeplanetpodcast.com.